Chapter 45. The first thing Kit noticed when she woke up was pain. A radiating pain from the back of her head. A sharp, sickly pain from the gash in her hip. And deep, muscular ache all over her body, like she was being crushed in the fist of some giant. There were tubes in her nose and hand. A catheter from between her legs. And a thicker one coming out of a bandage around her hip. She moaned, which seemed to make more of the pain, but also less. Charlie was wrapped in a hospital blanket in a chair next to the bed. When she saw Kit stirring, her eyes got big. She jumped and went to the door, the blanket trailing behind her. Instead of her clothes, she wore a pair of baggy green scrubs.
"Hi, somebody," she called halfway into the hall. "She's awake."
Then she turned around and smiled at Kit.
"Holy shit, you're awake."
As she started back toward Kit, her feet got caught in the blanket and she tripped and fell, sliding across the floor, arms outstretched. Kit tried to reach for her and was hit by a wall of pain. She cried out. It hurt so bad she felt sickness rise up and turned her head to vomit. She retched, her stomach empty, and collapsed back on the pillow. Charlie appeared next to her, chewing on a thumbnail.
"I want to hug you," Charlie said, "but I'm afraid I'll fuck you up or something."
Kit lifted her fingers to show her she wanted to be touched. Her throat and her mouth were dry, and she wasn't sure if she could speak. Charlie covered Kit's hands with hers, lightly, so as not to hurt her. There was blood beneath Charlie's nails and in the curves of her cuticles. She came close and lay her head next to her mother's. Kit drank in the feeling of her daughter, smelled the gun smoke in her hair, tasted her saltwater tears. All this, and the vivid burn of a lifetime of hurt. She cried out again. Charlie stepped back, wiped her tears with the soft side of her wrist, looking incredulous.
"Wait a sec," she said, looking stunned. "You're hurting?"
Kit herself could not understand, but the numbness she had known nearly her whole life was indeed gone. She nodded slightly, wincing. She tried to clear her throat and gagged on the paste of her spit. On a rolling table behind Charlie, there was a large plastic mug with a straw leaning out of it. Kit gestured with her head that she wanted some water.
"Oh," Charlie said, "you're thirsty. Okay, hang on. Sorry, I drank it all."
She went to the sink and filled up the mug. Then she brought the water to Kit and bent the straw toward her split and bloodied lips. Kit sipped the cool water, let it fill her mouth and run down her throat. There was a cursory knock at the door, and a short, spry nurse in colorful scrubs bustled in with a clipboard. She washed her hands briskly at the sink and snapped on a pair of rubber gloves.
"Excuse me, hon, coming through,"
she said, brushing past Charlie.
"I need you to stand over there so I can work, okay?"
Charlie obeyed. With a practice deficiency, she checked and squeezed a bag of fluids that was dripping down a tube into Kit's hand, wrote something down on her clipboard. Then she took Kit's vitals and looked in her eyes. She smelled like coffee and iodine.
"You got pretty beat up, Missy," she said. "How's your pain?"
Her voice was a brassy trumpet in Kit's ear. Kit shook her head to say she felt like shit.
1 to 5, 5's the worst.
Kit held up 5 fingers. She wanted to explain that all this was new to her.
"Is it supposed to hurt this bad?"
she croaked. The nurse laughed sympathetically.
"Well, of course it should. You got cut up to ribbons, you poor thing. ought to hurt like the dickens. I'm awfully sorry you're feeling so bad.
Kit nodded, a little choked up at the kind way the nurse was talking to her.
Bless your heart, she said, and put a little button attached to a wire in Kit's hand. This is your morphine pump. Hit it now, and anytime the pain gets to 3.
Kit fingered the button, but didn't press it. The pain was terrible, but she wanted to see how long she could stand it. The nurse pulled a watch out of her pocket and, seeing the time, shook her head.
The doctor's behind schedule today, so I'm going to explain a few things to you, okay?
Kit nodded. She could see Charlie straighten up at attention, as if ready to commit what the nurse had to say to memory.
You sustained a laceration to your right femoral artery. That's this big one right here, she said, pointing to the front of her right hip. You were taken right into surgery, where they sutured you up and took you to recovery. You lost a lot of blood, so we had to give you a transfusion of donor blood and kept you on fluids and electrolytes.
Kit remembered being thrust into the window. The sound of shattered glass.
You could have died, but this little lady, she said, pointing to Charlie, she saved your life. Brave little sister you got there. Police said they found her leaning all her weight on the wound, trying to stem the blood.
Charlie fiddled with the drawstring on her scrubs.
Anywho, the nurse said,
and dropped her clipboard in a clear plastic box hanging by the door.
That's all I got. Take small sips of water, and doctor will be by in a few hours.
Charlie returned to her station and held the straw up for Kit again. She sipped and swallowed.
How did you know to do that?
Kit finally spoke, her voice raspy.
Stop the bleeding, I mean.
Charlie shrugged. A lull fell between them. Kit had little memory of anything that happened after she killed Manny, and even that was devoid of imagery. Just a spray of sensation and sound.
Did you say me do it?
Kit asked. Charlie looked around the room, as if searching for distraction.
Yeah, she said. I couldn't just leave you with him. After he went down, I ran to a payphone I noticed on our way to the motel. There was some change on the floor of that car Manny stole.
Kit shuddered at the many ways she had failed to protect Charlie that night. She could hardly stand the thought of her daughter, all alone, pressing her beautiful hands on a gushing wound, not knowing if her mother would make it.
I don't deserve you, she said to Charlie,
who, in her oversized scrubs, looked like a much younger child playing dress-up.
Not gonna lie, Charlie said. It's gonna be pretty tough to wipe that one out of my memory.
She stared loosely at the wall behind Kit.
I mean, you pretty much lopped his fucking head off.
Kit winced again. It was ghastly, and yet Charlie saying it aloud made it slightly less so. Charlie got quiet. She began to cry, held the butts of her hands to her eyes, her ribs fluttering with sobs, her voice full and mournful. Kit reached out her hand.
I'm so sorry, she said,
holding back tears for Charlie.
No, it's not that, Charlie said. I'm not crying about what I saw. I know he's bad, and I'm not sorry he's dead. You know, after he took me to that place, I knew he was a creepy fucker, but
she looked up at the ceiling.
I was kind of excited to have a dad, and I'm just so sad that he's gone. You know, not Manny exactly, but the person I thought was my dad.
Kit half smiled, aching with the truth of it and loving her daughter so much it became a new pain. She thumbed away the tears around Charlie's eyes, then drew her near so their foreheads touched.
I think maybe what you're missing is a parent that doesn't treat you like shit, she said.
Charlie let out a sniffly laugh.
I'd say I did my best, but my best was most people's worst. I thought the best thing I could teach you was how to be tough.
Charlie tucked her chin to her chest and turned away.
Little kids aren't supposed to be tough, though, are they?
Kit said. Charlie's whole face turned upside down, and she sobbed like she'd been holding it in all her life. Kit pulled her into her arms and held her daughter tight, squeezed her with all the love in her heart. The pain soon overwhelmed her so that she had to let Charlie go and lie back down. All at once, the pain subsided, and a heavy, peaceful feeling coursed through her body.
The nurse said hit it when you get to 3, Charlie said,
the morphine drip button in her hand.
She said it was okay. You'll feel better soon.
Kit nodded minutely, eyes closed.
I'm just gonna rest for a bit, she said.
Okay, Charlie said,
her eyes blotchy and swollen from tears.
I'll be here.
Charlie pulled the chair closer to the bed, before she drifted off. Kit pulled back the blanket and patted the space next to her. Charlie climbed in, ever so carefully, and curled up in the warm bay of her mother's lap. Chapter 46. Later that day, Kit cracked her eyes, rubbed away a mortar of goop, and found Caleb in the armchair next to her, perfectly upright, eyes closed. She could tell by the slow drag of his breath that he was sleeping. Her heartbeat sped up, and she wasn't sure if it was from injury or because of how oddly endearing he looked there, dozing like a horse.
"Where's Charlie?" she asked.
His eyes flitted open.
"Ha," he said and smiled. "I think she went to get some lunch."
Then Kit remembered his reaction when she had asked him to help her look for Charlie. She rolled her head away from him. There was a load of anger inside her, rearing and ready to buck. It was so big she feared it might hurt her. She groped around for the morphine button.
"I got nothing to say to you," she said,
hoping her scorn would push him backward and out the door.
"I'm sorry, Kit," he said, like he could read her mind. "I felt so bad about turning you away that I went looking for you as soon as I was done with Sandy's crime scene. But you weren't home. They'd seen you at the church and said you'd left in a huff. Doc told me what really happened. I'm just so sorry."
All his talking only made her more angry, a bitter brew of old hurt and new.
"You be mad at me all you want, Kit," he said. "I deserve it. I can't believe I didn't listen to you."
She shook her head slightly and fixed her gaze on a dry erase board that tracked her meals, pees, and shits.
"I'm a terrible cop," he said.
And she could hear he was smiling.
Smiling?
What did he think was so funny about all this?
"I have terrible instincts," he said.
She turned toward him, his friendly, goofy face just gazing at her like she was a newborn baby.
"If you feel so terrible, why do you look so happy?" she asked. "Well, dang it," he said. "I'm just so relieved to see you. After Sandy, and when I heard Charlie had been seen out in the boonies with that..."
He exhaled and slapped his hands on his thighs.
"Well, I've never been so glad to see you give me a dirty look."
She tried to sit herself up, but a new colossal pain shot through her. She went to hit the morphine button,
then changed her mind and waited for the searing waves to ebb. Though her eyes were closed, she sensed him move to her side. She wanted to come around. Couldn't she remember the good that came before he let her down? When she opened her eyes, he was right there, kind and concerned.
"Look, I'll change the subject, okay? No pressure," he said,
pulled a pen from his shirt pocket, and clicked it open.
"Don't suppose you'd be up for giving me a statement," he said, gauging her reaction.
She wasn't tracking.
"I know it's bad timing and maybe bad taste, but you know, technically I am still on this case."
He stopped, likely noticing her confusion.
"Sandy's murder?"
There was a little dip of disappointment in her middle as she wondered if that was why he had come today and not to see her.
"We sure don't have to do it right now if you're not up for it," he said.
The prospect of putting something down on official record gave her pause. She had killed a man last night, and there would be specific questions about how long she knew Manny, the nature of their relationship, and possibly even why she had come to Pecan Hollow. A simple lining up of the date she came to town and the day Manny was arrested would be damning. She needed time to think this through. "I'm not up for it." The guilt hung heavy around her. He clicked the pen closed.
"Fair enough," he said. "Good excuse to come back tomorrow."
He looked like he was thinking something over.
"Look, I know you've never been real enthused about us, but just so you know, you've got a lot of fans back in Pecan Hollow."
"Ha," she said. "What's the punchline?"
"No, seriously. You're a hero. Charlie, too."
She was no hero. She was an outlaw. Even outlaw was too grand a name for what she was. She was a crook and a coward. She'd been hiding from the wrong she'd done for too long. She had to come clean to him.
"Look, don't call me that," she said. "I'm a criminal."
He pulled his chair up to the bed.
"You're not. What you did, that was self-defense," he said, all worked up. "That was an act of courage."
"No, no, I'm not talking about that," she said. "Listen, please. Before I came here, I was with Manny. We were together, kind of, and we did bad things. I did bad things. I never worked for anything, just went around scaring people and taking their hard-earned money. I never wanted you or anyone to know because I thought they'd take Charlie away from me. But now, with what just happened, people will be looking into things and..."
She trailed off. He was fumbling in his back pocket for something. She flashed angry eyes at him.
"The hell are you doing?" she said. "I'm making my goddamn confession here."
Caleb let out a nervous laugh.
"Listen, sorry, if you give me a quick second."
He opened his wallet and pulled out a square not much larger than a postage stamp and placed it in the palm of his hand. Kit strained to focus on the grainy scrap in black and white. He held it closer and she took it, wincing against the pain of moving. It was cut from a copy of a photo, cropped around the image of a young woman, her eyes reflected in a rearview mirror, her ponytail thrashing in the wind.
"That's me," she whispered, frightened at what this could mean.
"How did you find this?"
Caleb tugged at the collar of his shirt, his throat blotchy.
"Right after you came to town, when I was at the academy," he said. I was on a ride along with the Richmond PD, and the cop I was shadowing had this flyer printed and taped to the dash. They'd sent out an APB on the lookout for a young woman about 5 foot tall, hair dark, driving a Mustang. They said hair length could be long or buzzed. When I saw you there at the spaghetti supper, I knew it was you. It wasn't just your hair. It was your eyes, like you could knife somebody with them. Your eyes were the giveaway. You knew all this time, she asked, feeling so exposed, robbed of her armor. She hadn't realized how much her secrets had been a part of her.
I guess I did.
She lay back to rest, eyes closed, splicing this new information into the last 14 years.
And you just let me be?
I was never going to turn you in,
he said, his cheeks looking hot to touch.
Especially not after I saw you were going to have a baby.
She wanted to say something to Caleb about how she'd felt him loving her all these years, how she didn't think she deserved someone so friendly and decent, how she had thought she might break him. She remembered the curly-haired gosling standing in line at the spaghetti supper, so earnest and new, how she had spent all these years swerving around him like he was a small thing she could crush.
You should have arrested me, she said, feeling sleepy. I did wrong. I should go to jail.
His fingers found her hand now. He dragged them from the tips of her nails to the crease in her elbow and back again, a swirl around her palm. It did not burn. It was a gesture both bold and comforting. She closed her eyes and felt the pain flow out of her.
Aren't you going to take treatment?
She asked, wondering as she said it why she just couldn't let a good moment be.
Guess not,
he said, and tucked the covers behind her shoulders, flipped off the lights. He settled back into his seat, folded his hands across his chest, and shut his eyes. His hands were larger than she had remembered, the backs of them fleeced with blonde. And his nails, while trim, could have used a good cleaning. The setting sun appeared through a part in the curtains and warmed her face. She could hear a pair of chickadees squabbling outside the window. She closed her eyes again and felt at once the ache in her hip and the warmth that was settling around her heart. A few days before Kit was set to leave the hospital, there was a quick rap on her door.
Anyone home?
Somebody said. Then in came a woman wearing an iridescent aqua unitard with stirrups and white patent leather heels. Her platinum hair was fluffed and sprayed in a fancy mullet. Under the heavy makeup, the familiar face was thin and haggard.
Red? Is that you?
Kit said, dumbstruck. She hadn't seen her since the night 14 years ago when she'd come by, newly pregnant and scared.
You look...
Kit swung around in search of an accurate but inoffensive description.
Rode hard and put up wet. Lord, don't I know it. But we've all been through some shit now, ain't we?
She said.
Look at you, all battle-scarred and victorious and whatnot. I read about you in the paper is how I knew to come. Oh, Kit,
she said and looked troubled, like she was digging up something uncomfortable. Kit was trying to figure out what Red was doing here. She was happy to see her, but it was painful, too. With Manny dead, Red was the only one who had known Kit back then.
Well, you know, I could chew the cud with you all day long. And dang, is it nice to see you. But I might as well cut to the chase. I've come to beg your pardon.
Pardon for what? Kit asked.
Well, baby,
Red said, catching a deep, preparatory breath.
It's like this. Manny and I, we kept in touch when he was in prison. I'd come for his conjugals and such, just to keep his spirits up. He really seemed changed, all biblical and right with the Lord. When he got out, I picked him up, and right off the bat, he dug into me trying to find out where you were. At first, I played dumb, 'cause it seemed to me you didn't want to be found. But he didn't buy it. He made threats I knew he'd make good on, so I...
She stopped and covered her mouth with her hand like she didn't want to say the next part.
I told him where you might have gone to.
Kit felt heavy in her gut and so tired. She dropped her head to the pillow and closed her eyes. Manny had found her because of Red. Red's voice began to waver, and she stopped talking to rummage in her purse.
God damn, I'm not about to cry. I got my full face on, and wouldn't you know, my touch-up bag is at home.
She looked at the ceiling, her thick, coated lashes batting, little inky pools gathering at the rims of her eyes. She groped around for something, snapped her fingers.
Quick! Someone hand me a hanky, damn it!
Kit passed her the box next to her bed, and Red pulled three tissues and folded them and held them under her eyes to draw out the tears.
Anyhow, I felt so bad, and I was worried for you. I tried calling you, but you didn't answer. I left you a message. Did you get it? Doesn't matter. When I couldn't reach you, I shot myself so full of smack I nearly died. Good thing I got nosy neighbors. Lois Tenenbaum, God bless her vicious little heart, been causing me trouble for the 20 years I've lived on Mesquite Lane. That night, she barged in my house to complain about my music being loud and found me unconscious and face down in my own sick. That old bitch straddled me and gave me mouth to mouth and pumped my chest till I started breathing again. Spent a few days in the hospital, called my folks, and got myself straight in a rehab thingy. I honestly don't know how I got into that hard stuff. Used to be Dr. Pepper was my only fix. But I just let my guard down with one of those guys, got caught at the wrong time. Only had to do it once.
Red blew her nose loudly, then seemed to notice Charlie for the first time.
Oh, my Lord in heaven, is this?
She pointed at Charlie.
Did you keep it? This your baby?
Kit nodded. Red clicked over to Charlie and threw her arms around her.
Oh, sweet baby,
she said, and took Charlie by the face.
Your mama almost had to get rid of you, but she didn't. She wanted you, you hear?
Charlie nodded, a little stunned.
God damn,
Red said.
I didn't expect that. Woo!
Charlie giggled. Red pulled up her chair to Kit's bedside and brushed the jagged layers away from her face.
You sure do have goofy-looking hair. What have you been cutting it with? A fork and knife?
Kit laughed a little, and Red sighed.
Hun, I tried looking out for you. I hope it felt like something to you, but it sure wasn't enough. You were a kid. I turned the other way. I should have called the cops on him. I should have taken you by the hand and led you out of there myself.
She pulled a cigarette out of a rhinestone-encrusted case and went to light it, then put it away.
My drug counselor says, Winifred, you're shooting all over yourself. But fact is, I owe you an amends.
Kit's eyes clouded up, and she felt faint. Red was right. She had been the only person in a position to help her, and she'd let her stay with Manny. Maybe Red hadn't known how bad he was. She must have known something wasn't right, though.
"Don't you hate me?" Red said with eyes brimming. "I sure would feel better if you did."
Kit cooled as she considered her old friend. She took a full breath and tried to let go of the ugly feeling that had passed over her. Red was here in good faith. She didn't want to push Red away. Kit could feel forgiveness coming on, and she wanted her old friend to know it.
"Look, Manny's the one who hurt me," Kit said, "and no one's responsible but him. I appreciate your telling me in person like this. And I missed you. I did. I hope you don't feel too bad, because you were there for me when I called."
Kit looked down at her scarred and calloused hands.
"But I think it might be too painful to see you anymore, because of everything you said. Knowing you knew and didn't help. I'm glad you came, though, Red. Thank you."
Red kept her eyes on Kit and squeezed her hand.
"I got you, babe," she said.
Then she tipped her head toward Charlie.
"You did good."
Kit nodded.
"Well, I got a hot date tonight. I better mosey."
Red hoisted herself up, hovered over Kit, and smeared her forehead with a glossy kiss. Then she picked up her purse, fluffed her hairdo in the chrome of a cabinet, and jiggled out the door.
"The hell was that?"
Charlie said, emerging from her corner of the room.
"That woman was your friend?"
Charlie didn't think she'd forget her as long as she lived.
"I didn't mean for you to hear all of that," Kit said, a touch shameful, fragile, almost.
"It's okay,"
Charlie said, softening her tone.
"It was kind of interesting to hear a little more about you. I can't believe you know someone like her."
Kit kept her eyes closed and waved for Charlie to sit down next to her. She looked like a ragged doll lying there, her strange bob a mess around her face, the covers pulled up to her armpits.
"I'm sorry," Kit said. "I guess I kept you in the dark about a lot of stuff. Some of it you should know about."
She took a deep breath and let it go.
"I'm not so good at looking backward. It pains me to do it. But I want you to know where I've been in case."
Charlie leaned in.
"In case what?"
Her eyes met Charlie's for a moment and then fluttered closed.
"I don't know," Kit said. "In case it helps you make sense of why I'm so hard to love."
Charlie was very still, as if the wrong move or word would break her mother's moment of honesty.
"When I was born," Kit said, "my mother left me and never came back."
Charlie's throat filled up with emotion. And then Kit told her everything. About the foster families, and running away, and meeting Manny. She told her about the stealing and robberies, how Manny had taken advantage of her, and what happened the day Kit fled to Pecan Hollow. After she got it all out, she was quiet for a while, maybe thinking things over.
"I worry sometimes I made you suspicious of everyone, 'cause I never learned who was kindly and who was not. And I think that's made it hard for you to have friends. And I'm really sorry for that. But you have to know it's because I was trying to keep you safe. If I'd done right or wrong, it was always for you."
Charlie didn't realize she was crying until she felt the tears splash on her arms. She wiped them away, but they came and came, She pitied her mom, so lonesome for so long. And she understood, maybe a sliver, of how her mother had felt. Charlie, too, had felt motherless sometimes. But hearing her story now, told straight, it didn't matter how awful the truth was. It was just such a relief to shine a light in the shadow. Chapter 47. The day Kit was set to leave the hospital, she waited for Charlie and Doc to pick her up. She'd been cleared by doctors and said goodbye to her nurses and the physical therapist who had been helping her use her leg again. The doctors had urged her to take her pain meds, but she did not want to numb anymore. She was afraid of losing feeling, because the feeling, whatever it was, let her know she was still there. The doctors warned her the limp might not go away, and if that wasn't bad enough, they'd served her up a hospital bill the size of Texas. It was the kind of debt that she'd spend the rest of her life repaying unless she won the lottery or robbed a bank. The only thing she owned of any value was Eleanor's house. She had already started to consider selling when she found out from Caleb that Sandy had been killed in her room, that the clothes Sandy had worn were found in the dryer. It was hard to imagine getting a full night's sleep in the house knowing all that. She wondered bitterly if Manny had known he was ruining the place for her. She figured she could get enough out of it to pay down the bulk of her bill and maybe buy a trailer, a home you could move. She felt lighter when she imagined a fresh start, but only when she didn't think about what it would do to Charlie. It wasn't just the house she dreaded, though. It was the town. She couldn't forget how they had looked back at her that night at the church. Rows of judging eyes and scolding lips. She couldn't face them again. Not after they had turned their backs on her and Charlie. There were a couple dozen greeting cards she hadn't opened stacked on the counter next to the cotton balls and hand soap. She didn't need sympathy from them. What she needed did not fit on a card. She thought of Eleanor, how much she had loved that house and left it to Kit, and wondered what she would have said. If her great aunt had known what happened at the church, would she still have told Kit to stick with it, make nice with everyone? Or would she have been outraged and given her blessing to sell the house and make a home somewhere new? Kit hated the thought of someone else coming in and stripping the wallpaper, painting the walls, adding their personal touch to a home in which four generations of her family had now lived. Around 10 in the morning, Charlie and Doc showed up with a fistful of ugly balloons and a pink teddy bear. "Get rid of that shit," Kit said, and they laughed at her. Doc let the balloons bob upward, scatter on the ceiling, and Charlie tossed the bear in the linens basket. They moved in to hug her, and she let them, even hugged them back, though reluctance was still her habit. "Here, I brought you some clothes from home," Charlie said, holding out a big plastic Walmart bag. Kit took the bag and held it open, looked inside. "Thanks." Charlie paused, chewed on her lip. "I figured you probably didn't want to wear your frickin' murder clothes." Kit laughed and winced at the pain of laughter. "Good thinking," she said. "Whatever I was wearing, they cut right off of me. This'll be just fine." The effort of dressing and getting into Doc's van and being friendly to Doc and Charlie knocked her out as soon as they got on the road. Kit relaxed to the sounds of Doc's bayou vowels and Charlie's hoarse interjections, the rush of the wind through the windows, and drifted in and out of sleep. The thrum of the cattle guard awoke her. and as she took in the sight of the little ranch house, Kit scarcely recognized it. Once a shabby, flaking gray, the clapboard had been stripped and painted a gorgeous cream with moss-green windows and doors. Someone had filled the holes in the drive, which was now cushy with fresh gravel. And there were people, dozens of them, milling about, holding drinks, shooting the shit.
"What the hell is going on?"
Kit said, feeling unsteady.
"Surprise, babe! This is for you,"
Doc said and parked the van. Charlie beamed and clapped her hands.
"Mom, can you believe it?"
she said. Kit hadn't seen Charlie so excited in years.
"Mom, get out! Everyone's waiting!"
Charlie bounded out of the van, ran a few steps, and waited, then ran back to the van to help Kit out. There was a squeamish rumble in Kit's stomach as she stuck both legs out the door and slid to her feet. She got the nerve to look at the crowd, the faces she recognized but had never bothered to understand. The people of Pecan Hollow were smiling and applauding.
"Mom, you're a freaking hero," Charlie said. "Everybody knows what you did, how you saved us from him. People kept calling and stopping by, asking me what they could do to make things right. I said I didn't know, but could someone clear out the brambles from the back door? So they pooled together and cleared the brambles and then some. They've been working these last couple weeks to fancy up the house. Isn't it awesome?"
The sounds of hoots and cattle calls, many hands clapping, morphed into one sound, like water in her ears. The look on Charlie's face, ecstatic and impatient, begged for a reaction. Kit was embarrassed and confused. She didn't know how to act or what to say. Were they mocking her? She tensed up, thinking about people creeping around the house without her knowing. The one place where she had felt safe, crawling with strangers. But they hadn't been creeping, had they? They had been helping. Even if it wasn't the kind of help she asked for, it was something. And here they all were with sorry in their eyes. This resentment she'd been carrying had been so comfortable, much easier to bear than forgiveness.
"You did this for me?"
she asked, too quietly for them to hear. Doc slid the van door behind her, as if to cue her to move forward.
"Well," Charlie said, laughing, "what the hell do you think?"
For the first time, she noticed how nice Charlie looked. Her thick hair brushed and braided, a clean white blouse that was new to Kit, tucked into her jeans. And so tall. She cleared her throat, reached out for Charlie's hand, and shuffled toward the steps, now patched and painted the same mossy green as the front door. As she scanned the faces, there was one, in particular, she hoped to see. But there were so many, and she could not make Caleb out among all the cowboy hats. She tested the first step with her foot, and it was strong and did not creak. There was a full-bodied, expectant silence behind her. She could smell the paint, and the young thyme they'd planted in the window boxes. When she stepped inside, she was relieved to see that most of the interior had been cleaned, but unchanged. It comforted her to be among Eleanor's things, maybe now more than ever. Charlie tugged her, too hard, toward the kitchen. A burst of pain.
"Look in the fridge," she said. "Just look."
There was a basket full of green apples, a block of cheese and butter, 3 loaves of bread, 2 dozen eggs, and homemade pickles and jams. There was a gooey pecan pie and a gallon of milk, a ham, 2 rolls of ready-made biscuits, and breakfast sausage in a tube. People had crowded around the house, and a few started to poke their heads in. Sugar Fay pushed her way inside with a cooler rolling behind her, high heels muddy, gold bracelets jangling.
"Welcome home," she said. "Do you like it? Did it just blow your mind? I chaired the food committee, of course," she said proudly. "Looky here in the freezer."
Her nails clicked on the freezer handle as she pulled the door open. Behind a gust of chilly mist were stacks of glass dishes covered in foil.
"There's spaghetti casserole and chicken tetrazzini, King Ranch casserole and enchiladas and 2 trays of cornbread."
Her fridge hadn't been so full or so tempting since Eleanor. Still, Kit was too resentful to thank them.
"And here, I got us some hot tamales and pimento cheese sandwiches and a thermos of lemonade spiked with my cousin's homemade hooch,"
Sugar said, and she winked conspicuously at Kit before pulling her into a warm, perfumed hug.
"You know, for the pain."
Kit just stood there, stony, until Sugar backed off. The anger flared up, snatched away her breath. She grabbed the back of the chair, swayed by the sudden spike of emotion. She felt a heaviness she knew would only lift if she faced the waiting crowd. The same people who had shouted her out of the church like a flea-bitten stray.
"You ran me off,"
she said aloud, her voice cracking. She heard someone gasp. Another coughed. People outside craned toward the windows to hear. Everyone's eyes were on her.
"I needed your help," she said, and pointed at Charlie. "She needed you."
Apart from the small sounds of many people gathered together, all was silent. The faces she saw were long and sorry, some ashamed.
"She's right," someone said.
It was Pastor Tom, leaning against the banister. She waited for something long-winded, but that was it. A few people murmured in agreement.
"I didn't want to do what I did," she said. "I shouldn't have had to. I didn't need any of this," she said, swinging her arm around. "A coat of paint isn't going to help me forget how you shut us out. Not going to help her forget watching me."
She stopped, breathless, and closed her eyes. Was it any use explaining?
"We don't need your fair-weather friendship."
When she opened her eyes again, they were all still there, solemn and sorry.
"For what it's worth, sweetie,"
Sugar Fay said.
"I made good on my promise to you. We were a couple hundred strong that night looking for Charlie. I raised hell until I had an army out there combing the pastures, knocking on doors. You never seen so many flashlights in one place."
Kit hadn't known that. The image of all those people banding together to help made her want to cry. But she couldn't. Not here. She wanted to hold on to this anger. It was hers.
"So you'll listen to Sugar, but not to me," Kit said bitterly. "If you had helped me sooner, maybe I wouldn't have had to do what I did."
They had wronged her so deeply, she couldn't see how she could ever feel any different.
"I'm sorry, but I'm through being where I'm not wanted."
Sugar Fay looked pained. Doc swooped in and started muscling the crowd.
"This woman is exhausted. Let's give her some room now, y'all. Let's leave her be."
She waved her arms around, shooing them toward the door.
"Now, hang on a sec there. Everybody stop."
Caleb emerged, pressing against the exiting throng. He was livid
and blew a shrill whistle between his teeth.
Kit, you listen here.
He took off his hat and frisbeed it onto the kitchen table and stood so that he had Kit on his right and a dozen or so people to his left, with the rest pressed around the house and crammed on the porch. Kit nearly smiled to see him, his cheeks flushed, a little wildflower in his buttonhole. He cleared his throat and wavered for a moment, as if he were just now realizing he would have to deliver on the expectations he'd only now set.
Now, Kit, we all...
He swooped his arm across the crowd.
We all owe you an apology. We did the unforgivable. We left you to search for your child. Left you to reckon with a cruel and dangerous man all on your own. Hell, some of us trusted him even more than we trusted you.
He cast a glance at Pastor Tom, who bowed his head in recognition.
You're right to hold a grudge. We can be a clannish and suspicious people, and we let you down.
A few people nodded as Caleb's speech took on a preachy rhythm. Kit had never seen him this forceful.
And you never gave a rip what we thought.
At this, he smiled and shook his head.
You couldn't care less if the ladies talked about your haircut or your misbehaving daughter. You wouldn't mind how many heads you turned. But some of us have been waiting for you to see that we are here for you. And you have to see here, Kit, that if you want the good, you gotta get with the bad. We're a family here, and family doesn't get to sign out. Family stays. Family forgives.
A scattering of, that's it, and uh-huh, and preach, issued from the listening crowd. Kit burned under this direct and public appeal. And she burned with a feeling so fond and wishful, she began to sweat and dabbed the moisture from her temples with her sleeve. And it wasn't clear if it was fondness for Caleb or a reluctant closeness with these people gathered around her.
Now we have come here to apologize to you and Charlie, he said, reaching into Sugar Faye's cooler. To welcome you home and to eat some gosh dang pimento cheese.
He pulled out a stack of tea-sized sandwiches with orange filling, slapped them on a paper plate, and set them down in front of Kit. He let his message hang a beat to sink in.
So, what do you say?
Kit looked out at the faces, smiling and urging her on. There was prim and pretty Beulah and Principal Fowler looking chastened. All she could see of Glennis was her beehive. And there were the two old widows who lived together, whose names escaped her, but whose wrinkled faces reminded her of Eleanor, powdery and kind. Eleanor. She wished her great aunt were here now. Kit thought maybe Manny wouldn't have gotten past the front door if Eleanor had been there. She imagined Eleanor would have smelled a rat, driven him out, and told everybody in town not to trust him. She'd have protected her family. All at once, the anger rose, wrapped around her like a swarm of bees and stung. And she shook her head as if she could shake herself free of this hurt, and buried her face in the rough folds of her hands. She had a thousand reasons to hate these people, and only a handful of reasons not to. Her body ached, her heart throbbed, and she was tired, so tired she felt the labor of holding her eyes shut. She was tired of trying, tired of being wronged, tired of being disappointed in everyone and in herself. Then there was Charlie, two warm arms skimming her shoulders, squeezing her tight and tighter.
Strong arms. Arms like Kit's, but free from scars. This child. This child was not doomed to roam. She had an address and enough to eat, and she woke up in the same house every morning. She had neighbors who knew her name and family pictures on the wall. This child had a mother. This child was something special. Tears dripped from her eyes and wet her hands, and the bees dispersed. Her chest opened up, and there arose in her a warm and grinding hunger, useful and good. She took a soft sandwich and passed it to Charlie, then another to Caleb, and took one for herself. She ate it, salty and creamy, with a pop of cayenne and a clear memory of the first day she came to this house 14 years ago and ate this same sandwich at this table. There was a lightening in the room, a collective exhale, and people began filing in. Sugar dealt out paper plates. Doc served the sandwiches, and Charlie dispensed Dixie cups of hooch lemonade. When the house had filled up, people sat on the porch and in the beds of their trucks, on overturned buckets and crates, and cross-legged on the grass. Kit was not ready to move among them. But she listened to them tell stories of how she had slain the dragon and saved the town, and how proud they were to know her. Chapter 48. Once she was able to walk on her own, Kit called Caleb to meet for coffee at the diner. He wore a pressed denim shirt and jeans, and his badge was hooked onto his pocket. Of course, he looked nicer than she did, she thought. And she had even tried to look half-decent by combing her hair and wearing her clean jeans. As she looked at Caleb, she noticed things she hadn't seen before. A scar cutting through the honey-blonde hair of his eyebrows. A little chip in his front tooth. One deep dimple in his right cheek when he smiled, and he smiled broadly when he saw her. He seemed different in the way he carried himself. More confident, not so cautious. It made her less afraid of damaging him. They sat down, and the new waitress, Sandy's replacement, a cheerleader type with a high ponytail and a store-bought tan, brought them two coffees. Caleb looked like he had a million things to say.
So, how are you?
How am I? She said, feeling anxious all of a sudden. It was strange to be here on a date, at last, with this gentle man who had waited years for her to give her heart freely. No lures, no manipulations, just the patience of a monk and a heart overflowing.
Better every day, she said. How are you?
Caleb smiled. Then, realizing something, he smacked the table.
I almost forgot.
He reached in his back pocket and pulled out something red and plastic. When he laid it on the table, she could see it was a biohazard bag.
I know this might be a little sensitive, he said, but I thought you'd want it back. I pulled it from where I found you. And, well, just to warn you, there's some blood on it. Yours, I think.
Kit took the bag. She tried ripping it open, but the plastic was thick and her hands were flimsy these days. Caleb tore it open for her, stretching the plastic and shook out what was inside. It was the sheet of school photos, folded into quarters, caked in blood. Brown, dry blood absorbed into the photo paper, smeared over the smiling Charlie's. She pulled it by the corners and laid it on the table, smoothed out its rigid bends. Some of the dried blood flaked off. She brushed it aside. Bleary images returned to her. Blood in her eyes, glass sticking out of her hip. Charlie appearing in the doorway before everything turned to black. She was heavy with the thought of what Charlie had seen. Too much ugliness. Too much blood. A waitress passed by.
Hi, can you get me some scissors?
Kit said.
Sure,
the cheerleader chirped. She found a pair in a catch-all can by the register and brought it to Kit. There was one photo at the center that was nearly clean. She clipped away at the photos on the outside and singled out the good one. She wet her napkin in her water glass and dabbed a little rusty spot from the corner of the picture, then slid it in her back pocket. The rest of the photos she stuffed back in the red bag and pushed it to the side. She noticed Caleb waiting patiently as always.
Thank you for getting this to me, she said.
As soon as I get home, I'm going to put this up on the wall. They drank their coffee and ordered some pie to go with it. As they ate, they talked about the goings on in town, about the trouble in Beulah's marriage, how Sugar's youngest son got a girl pregnant, Dirk's latest DWI, and how he might face jail time. Kit shared that Charlie's test results had come in, and though they were just short of passing, the school had agreed to graduate her to the 8th grade, given the summer she had had. Kit found herself relaxing and enjoying the pleasure of a little chit-chat to pass the time, just like Aunt Eleanor would have. After an hour or so, Caleb took out a couple of fives from his wallet and lay them on the check. He smiled.
Time for me to go back to work.
Kit did not want to lose the warmth of being near him. She did not want him to go.
Hang on, she said. I'll walk there with you.
She hoisted herself out of the booth and took his slim and steady arm, leaning generously into his side for balance, loving the feel of him next to her. Epilogue. Pecan Hollow, Texas, 1991. Kit kept thinking that, with Manny gone for good, she might finally feel safe. But she still faced each morning uneasy, ever looking into darkness. Perhaps it was the shock of killing him, the feel of it locked into her bones. She couldn't swing an axe or clear brush without releasing that grisly sensation. Meat, bone, blood. A slammed door would throttle her back to the motel with its dirty pigeon smell, and she would remember not the relief of seeing Charlie safe, but always the terror that preceded it, when she hadn't known which one of them would die first. She knew she should be grateful they had made it out alive. And things were better than ever with Charlie. They now talked with an honesty Kit had never dreamed possible. Charlie came to her with her worries, however small, and Kit had learned to listen. Charlie told Kit about Dirk, how he had stopped talking to her and why, how she still liked him even though she knew she shouldn't. Kit only said she understood, and that had been enough for Charlie. It had been painful to let her daughter in on the sins of her past, but she learned they were not quite so ugly as she had always thought. And there was freedom in letting Charlie know more about where she came from. Now, when Charlie asked her questions, even the hard ones, she answered. Still, she knew it was only a matter of time before Charlie moved on and started a life of her own. And when she did, Kit would be left to reckon with the darkness again. When she realized Manny's death would not end her worry, she felt freshly lost. He had loomed so large for so long, that she could not see that the gaping sadness at her center was not caused by him. He had climbed into the hole and lived there, stretching and warping it, making her think it had been filled. But its source, the great sadness of her life, was never knowing her mother. Caleb looked into it for her. It took him a few weeks, but he found Marie DeClaire. There was a minor rap sheet, shoplifting, drug possession, public nudity, and a joint bank account she shared with an old boyfriend, a rich landman, whom Caleb was able to get on the phone. He said she had been living in a rest home in Corpus Christi since a heart attack left her feeble and shaken. He had loved her so much he paid for her convalescence. He said she wasn't a kind woman, or even a good one, but that there was magic about her. The day Kit found out, the news had sickened her, like a meal she had eaten too quickly. She had not expected to find her mother, just a trail of crumbs she could savor, just enough to move forward without the shock of meeting her in person. The woman she had dreamed of all her life, in beds, cold and lonely, could always remain a watery figure, a myth. After a month of stomach aches and sleepless nights, she dug a map out of her glove compartment. She carefully traced the route with a pencil, 200 miles southwest. Then she fueled the truck and filled up its tires. In 3 hours, she arrived in Corpus with its salty air and seagulls and a long seawall that reminded her, chillingly, of Galveston. She parked the truck in front of the old folks' home where her mother lived and kept it running. The plain stucco building was fronted by a porte cochere with a wheelchair ramp leading up to the automatic glass doors. Bushy hibiscus and palmetto filled the planters and distracted from the exterior, which was salt-stripped and gray. She could walk through those doors right now and see the woman who had given birth to her. She wondered if Marie would know, just by looking at her, that Kit was her daughter. Was there something in the genes that let you remember, no matter how long had passed, who your children were? She lost her breath, thinking about all the questions she had been holding inside. Why did you leave me? How can you go on living without your child? If you could do it again, would you keep me? It was then that she realized there would be no answer good enough to explain the damage her mother had wrought by leaving her. It was true that Marie had been abandoned when her own mother died, that her father, in his way, had left her too. But how could she explain leaving an infant with nothing but a blanket and a note, short and ambiguous? How could she correct the lesson Kit would spend the rest of her life trying to unlearn? That an unwanted child must take what she can get. Kit knew she herself had been, at times, a terrible mother. She had fought with Charlie when her daughter needed holding. She'd gone silent when Charlie needed encouragement. She'd acted like a child when Charlie needed an adult. Maybe Kit had no right to judge, but raising a child was the only thing that let her broken heart keep beating. She remembered how, right after her birth, Charlie crept up to Kit's breast like a little squirrel and started nursing all by herself. Her eyes were swollen shut, and she was all turned around in a strange and scary world with nothing but the warmth of her mother's skin and the taste of her milk to comfort her. All Kit had to do was hold her. Though it required nothing of her, it was everything Charlie needed. She ached now, as she wondered if Marie had ever given her that. A moment of comfort before she was left in the cold. She dragged her sleeve across her eyes, then pulled a pen and a baggie from her pocket. The note she had held and read so many times had become a proxy for her mother. Her throat knotted as she wrote her own message on the back of the original. For Marie DeClaire, I was something special. She left the note at the front desk and returned to her truck feeling both lightness and loss. She wept, battered hands held to her face, muffling the sobs, wishing there was someone who could hold her. And then she remembered. Warm arms skimming her shoulders, her stormy dark hair. Charlie, whose childhood was nearly over. Those moments faded in the wash of much to do and too little time. Who had thrown her weight onto Kit's wound to save her life. Who still curled up to sleep with her mama. Kit shifted her truck into gear and drove full speed back to Pecan Hollow. Home to her daughter, her wet cat, claws out, foul-mouthed Charlie. Her heart unbearably alive and hurting with the gossamer quality of a wound beginning to mend. This is Alex McKenna. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Shadows of Pecan Hollow, a novel by Caroline Frost. Presented by William Morrow and Harper Audio. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer, Suzanne Mitchell. Text copyright 2022 by Caroline Frost. Production copyright 2022 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.